Ah, yes. Shalom Aleichem to all my pure-blooded white Christian Israelite brothers and sisters out there. The show is Word for Word for Friday, November the 11th, 2016. I'm Pastor Steve, and we will be reading from the book of Judges, chapters 7 and 8 today. That is Shofetim in the Hebrew, continuing the story of Gideon and what went on with him. This is a very, very exciting book, full of action, and Gideon's right in the middle of it. So let's have at it here. Now let me get a drink of iced tea and I'll be right with you. See what we got here. Nice and cold. Let's start in chapter 7, verse 1. Then Yerubbaal, that is Gideon, and all the people that were with him, rose early and encamped beside Ein Harod, 5878, and that's the spring or well of Harod, so that the camp of the Midiani was on the north side of them by Gibeah Moreh. Gibeah is 1389 and Moreh is 4176. In the valley of Yisrael. And Gibeah Moreh means the hill of the teacher, okay, or teacher's hill. Moreh means teacher, and Gibeah means hill. The hill of the teacher. Verse 2. And Yahweh said to Gideon, the people that are with you are too numerous for me to give the Midiani into their hands, lest Israel glorify themselves, that's one word, 6286, against me, saying, my own hand has saved me. Now, he didn't want their ego to come into play. Verse 3, now therefore, 6258, in other words, at this time. Proclaim now, 4994, in the ears of the people, saying, whoever is fearful, 3373, and afraid, 2730, let him return and depart, 6852, from Mount Gilead. And they returned from the people 22,000, and 10,000 remained. Now, 6852 here is Safar, and it has a dubious meaning, as it has the meaning of a peeping of a small bird. It could be used in a derogatory sense. He could have said, let him return and... let him return peeping like a small bird from Mount Gilead because they were afraid. He could have been using it derogatorily, but we really don't know. So it is a dubious word here. It is noted in Brown Driver Briggs' Decenius as dubious usage. And verse 3, you can reference Deuteronomy, chapter 20, verse 8. So this, he is going to be cutting down the number of his warriors down to a very small number. Verse 4. Yahweh said to Gideon, the people are yet too many. Bring them down to the water, and I will test them for you there. Test is 6884. And it shall be of whom I say to you, this one shall go with you. He shall go with you. And whomsoever I say to you, this one shall not go with you, he shall not go. Verses 5, 6, and 7 in chapter 7. The men that brought the water up in their hand to their mouth were warriors that looked around as they lapped the water from their hand. Those that bowed down were not paying attention to their surroundings, and Yahweh chose the attentive warriors. That's what's going to occur in 5, 6, and 7 here. Verse 5 of chapter 7. So he brought down the people to the water, and Yahweh said to Gideon, all who laps 3952 of the water with his tongue as a dog 3611 laps, set 3322 by himself from all that bows down 3766 upon his knees 1290 to drink. The number that lapped with their hand to their mouth was 300 men, but all the rest of the people bowed down upon their knees to drink water. Verse 7, Yahweh said to Gideon, by the 300 men that lapped will I save you and give the Midiani into your hand. Let all the other people go, every man to his place. So these guys dipped water into the palm of their hand, cupped their hand, and they were looking around as they were drinking, and they were lapping the water out of their hand. That shows they were paying attention. Verse 8. So the people took provisions, 6720, in their hand, and their shofars, and he sent all the rest of Israel, every man to his tent, and retained 2388 those 300 men, and the camp of Midian was beneath him in the valley. Verse 9. It came to pass the same night that Yahweh said to him, arise, go down to the camp of Midian, because I have given it into your hand. Verse 10, but if you are afraid to go down, go with Purah, 6513, down to the camp. Verse 11, and you shall hear what they say, and afterwards your hands will be strengthened, 2388, to go down to the camp. Then he went down with Purah, his servant, to the outside edge, at 7097, of the battle array, 2571, that was in the camp. Verse 12. The Midiani and the Amaleki and all the children of Kedem, that's children of the east, lay, 5307, in the valley like locusts for multitude. And their camels were without number, like the sand upon the seashore for multitude. Big army. Verse 13. Gideon had come, and behold, a man told a dream to another and said, behold, I dreamed, 2492, a dream, 2472, and lo, a cake, 6742, of barley, 8184, barley bread, turned over and over, 2015, into the camp of Midian. And 2015 is as tumbled. And came to a tent and smote it, so it fell, and overturned 2015. In other words, it turned it upwards, in other words, turned it upside down, so that the tent lay down. Verse 14. And the other fellow answered and said, "This is nothing but the sword of Gideon, the son of Joash, a man of Israel. Into his hand has Elohim given Midian and all the camp." Verse 15, "And it was when Gideon heard the telling of the dream and the breaking of it," 7667, as breaking the mystery of it or interpretation of the dream, "that he bowed down," 7812, "and returned to the camp of Israel and said, 'Arise, for Yahweh has given into your hand the camp of Midian.'" And when I say he bowed down and worshiped to Yahweh because of the revealing of this to him. Verse 16, "He divided the 300 men into three companies," at 7218, in other words, three heads, "and he put a shofar into every man's hand," that's a ram's horn trumpet, "with empty jars." Empty is 7386, and jars is 3537, "and a torch within each jar. He said to them, 'See from me and do likewise. And behold, when I come to the outside edge of the camp, it shall be as I do, so shall you do. When I blow a shofar, I and all that are with me, then blow your shofars also on every side of all the camp, and say, for Yahweh and for Gideon.'" Verse 19, "So Gideon and the 100 men that were with him came to the outside edge of the camp. In the beginning, 7218, the head of the middle, 8484, watch, 821. In other words, he had 100 men with him, and 100 men were going on the other side of the camp, and on the other side of the camp would be another 100 men. He had 300 men. "And they had but newly set the watch." In other words, they just put their guards out. "And they blew the shofars and broke the jars that were in their hands." Remember, they had torches in them. "And the three other companies broke the blew the shofars." They were "and broke the jars and held their torches in their left hands and the shofars in their right hands to blow. And they cried out, 'The sword of Yahweh and of Gideon.'" So evidently he split it up into three other companies. I stand corrected on that. He had them spread out all around the camp. Let's just put it that way. Verse 21, "They stood every man in his place," 8478, "all around the camp, and all the camp ran," 7323, "and cried out and fled," 5127. Verse 22, "And the 300 blew the shofars, and Yahweh set every man's sword against another man in all the camp, and the army fled to Beth Hashitta," 1029, "in Serera," 6888, "to the edge," 8193, "of Abel Mikala." That means dance meadow. Okay, that's what that means. "To Taboth," 2888. In other words, when he said they set every man's sword against another man, they were so confused and frightened, they were fighting among themselves. Verse 23, "And the men of Israel summoned," 6817, "from Naphtali and from Asher, and from all of Manasseh, and pursued after the Midianites. Verse 24. And Gideon sent messengers throughout all the hill country of Ephraim, saying, come down to meet the Midianites and seize, 39:20, before them the waters to Beth Bara and the Jordan. In other words, they were seizing all the water so they couldn't get across. Verse 25, and they captured, 39:20, two leaders of the Midianites, Oreb, 61:59, and Zeeb, 2062. And they slew Oreb upon the rock Oreb, and Zeeb they slew at the winepress, 3342 of Zeeb, and pursued after Midian and brought the heads of Oreb and Zeeb to Gideon on the other side of the Jordan. So they basically wiped out Midian. They did a number on them. And this continues on in chapter 8. And the men of Ephraim said to him, why have you done us this way, that you called us not when you went to fight with the Midianites? And they contended with him sharply. 2394. In other words, they wanted in on the kill. Verse 2. And he said to them, what have I done now? And in parentheses, it's compared to you. In other words, what have I done now? Is not the gleaning of Ephraim better than the vintage, 1210, of Abiezer? In other words, you guys are the ones that did all the heavy fighting. He's complimenting them, and he's soothing their temperament. He's a real politician. He's ameliorating their anger. Then their anger abated, 7503. Oh, wait a minute. Excuse me, verse 3. I missed the first part of it. Elohim has given into your hands the leaders of Midian, Oreb and Zeeb. And what was I able, 3201, to do compared to you? Then their anger abated, 7503, from upon him when he had said that. In other words, you guys are the real warriors, and you did the work. Verse 4. And Gideon came to the Jordan, that's the Jordan River, and passed over, he and the 300 men that were with him, weary, 5889, but still in pursuit, 7291. Verse 5. And he said to the men of Sukkot, 5523, that was the city there, give, please, loaves of bread to the people that follow me, because they are all weary, and I am pursuing after Zebok, 2078, and Salmunna, 6759, kings of Midian. Reasonable request. Verse 6. And the officials of Sukkot said, are the palms of the hands, 3709, of Zebok and Salmunna now in your hand, 3027, that we should give bread to your army, 6635. In other words, did you cut off their hands? Show me something, you know. Do you have them? Being real sarcastic and smart mouth. Okay. Verse 7, and Gideon said, therefore, When Yahweh has given Zebok and Zalmunna into my hand, then I will thresh, 1758, your flesh, 1320, with the thorns, 6975, of the wilderness, and with briars, 1303. In other words, thresh, he's going to beat them with stickers. They're going to pay a heavy price. Verse 8, and he went up from there to Penuel, 6439, and spoke to them likewise. And the men of Penuel answered him as the men of Sukkot had answered. Verse 9, and he spoke also to the men of Penuel, saying, when I return in peace, in other words, after the war is over, when I get these guys, I will tear down, 5422, this tower. There was a big tower at Penuel. They were very proud of that. So he's going to knock down their tower. Verse 10, Zebok and Zalmunna were in Karkor, 7174, that's spelled Q-A-R-Q-O-R. And their army with them, about 15,000. All that was left from all the army of the children of Kedem, that's the children of the east, for there fell 120,000 men that drew sword. And Gideon went up by the way of those that dwell in tents from the east of Nobah, 5025, and Yogbeha, 3011, and smote the camp, for the camp was secure, 983, felt secure. They were thinking that they were okay now. They had gotten away. Well, they had not gotten away. And verses 3 through 5, I forgot to give you a reference here of chapter 8, reference Psalm 83, verse 11. So these guys, they were very secure. They thought they were safe and sound, and they had gotten away from their pursuers, and their pursuers caught up with them. And they were already afraid of Israel, because Israel was just really putting it on them. So they were already afraid. Verse 12, when Zebok and Zalmunna fled, he pursued after them and captured the two kings of Midian, Zebok and Zalmunna, and terrified, 2729, all their army. Because they thought they were way behind them and they had gotten away. Well, they didn't. Verse 13, and Gideon the son of Joash returned from battle at the ascent of Keres, 2775. That's east of the Jordan River. Verse 14, and caught 3920, a youth, 5288, from the men of Sukkot, and inquired of him, and he described, 3789, to him the officials of Sukkot and the elders of it, 70 men. Verse 15, and he came to the men of Sukkot and said, behold, Zebok and Zalmunna, with whom you taunted me, 2778. And that literally means to say sharp things against. You said sharp things against me, saying, are the palms of the hands of Zebok and Zalmunna now in your hand, that we should give bread to your weary men? Uh-oh. Verse 16. 16. And he took the elders of the city and the thorns of the wilderness and briars and taught the men of Sukkot. In other words, he beat them with thorns and briars. He whipped them and punished them. So they were not doing real well. They had mocked a man that was a judge of Israel by Yahweh's command, and they paid a heavy price. Here we go, verse 17. And he tore down the tower of Penuel and slew the men of the city. Verse 18. He said to Zebok and Salmunna, "What manner of men were they whom you slew at Tabor?" And they answered, "Like you, so were they. Each one appeared," 8:3, 8:9, "the son of a king." Verse 19, and he said, "They were my brothers, the sons of my mother. As Yahweh lives, if you had let them live, I would not slay you." But they didn't. Verse 20, and he said to Yether, 3,500, his firstborn, "Rise up and slay them." But the youth did not draw his sword because he was afraid, because he was still a youth. That was too much. He was too young. He didn't have the courage of a man. Verse 21, then Zebok and Salmunna said, "Rise you up and strike us down." 6:2, 9:3, "For as the man is, so is his strength." 13:69. In other words, they would rather have Gideon kill him because he was going to make it quick instead of some kid hacking and chopping that didn't know what he was doing. It was a quick death. They'd rather have that. They knew they were going to die, so they might as well make it easy. And Gideon rose up and slew Zebok and Salmunna and took away the ornaments, 7,720, that were on their camels, 1581, necks. Oh, they had gold bells and silver this and all this other nonsense. Verse 22. Then the men of Israel said to Gideon, "Rule over us." That's 49:10. "Both you and your son's son also, for you have delivered us from the hand of Midian." All right. They were trying to make him a king right then and there. And that's not going to occur till the time of Samuel later on. It's not time for a king yet. And Gideon gives the right answer right here, verse 23. And Gideon said to them, "I will not rule over you, neither shall my son rule over you. Yahweh shall rule over you." Okay. All their problems really started when they rejected Yahweh, because they had been living in apostasy and they were being punished by the Midianites and their allies. Now they're trying to get an earthly king. And Gideon said no. Good for Gideon. Good man. Verse 24, and Gideon said to them, I would ask 7592, a request 7596 of you, that you would give me every man the earrings, 5141, of his plunder, 7998. Because they had golden earrings, because they were Yishmaeli, 3459. Now, he's speaking of the children of Kedem, the children of the east, Ishmaelites, the desert nomads of the east. And the Midianites were also nomadic. So, verse 25. And they answered, we will willingly give. And they spread, 6566, a garment, 8071. That would be the big shawl with the tzitzit that everybody wore, and cast in it every man the earrings of his plunder. Verse 26, and the weight of the golden earrings that he asked for was 1,700 shekels of gold, apart from ornaments and pendants, 5188, and purple, 713, clothing, 899, that was on the kings of Midian, and apart from the chains, 6060, that were on their camels' necks. I mean, they decorated their camels. Verse 27, and Gideon made an ephod, 646, of it, and put it in his city. And all Israel committed fornication there, going after it. Religious fornication, worshiping it as an idol, an icon, just like they did with the bronze serpent that Moshe had made. And it became a snare, 4170, to Gideon and to his household. Verse 28, so Midian was subdued before the children of Israel. So they lifted up their heads no more. In other words, they were not proud. They had bowed their heads and they were subjugated. And the land was quiet 40 years in the days of Gideon. Verse 29, and Jerubbaal, the son of Joash, that's Gideon, went and dwelt in his own house. Okay. And Gideon had 70 sons go forth from his loins, for he had many wives. Lots and lots of children. Verse 31, and his concubine, 6370, that was in Shechem, 7927, she also bore him a son whose name was Abimelech. All right, this is 40. Now, Abimelech can mean my father is king. It was the name of another king. And in that instance, it was Abimelech. My father is Molech. Okay. That word has dual meanings and dual spellings. That's number 40 in your Strong's Concordance. Like many, many other Hebrew words, it has multiple meanings. And Gideon the son of Joash died in a good old age, 7872, and was buried in the sepulcher, 6913, of Joash and Ophrah of the Abi Ha'izri. Verse 33. Here it comes. And it came to pass, as soon as Gideon was dead, that the children of Israel turned again and committed religious fornication after Baalim and made Baal Berith, 1170, their Elohim. And Baal Berith means Baal of the Covenant. Verse 34. And the children of Israel did not remember Yahweh their Elohim, who had delivered them from the hands of all their hated enemies on every side. Nor did they kindness, 2617, to the house of Yerubbaal, who was Gideon, according to all the goodness which he had done to Israel. We're talking about our people here. This is this seems to be a habit that we are forgetful of all the miracles that were done by Yahweh over all the years. And they worship some little stone idol. I mean, I just, you know. We seem to do that a lot. Now, I realize that our country is a corporation, okay? And that the wars are Jewish-sponsored wars for profit. But in the spirit of patriotism for what this country once was and how it was founded, a lot of our men, when they're called to serve in the military, go over and they lose their lives, they lose limbs. They are poisoned by our own government with vaccines, etc., etc. And then they come back over here and the Veterans Administration does not take care of them. They deny them a lot of services. They are ill. Not only are they ill, but the poisons that have been used on them affects their families. Oh, that's just in your mind. It's all psychological. But their wives and kids are getting the same symptoms with the rashes and stuff because they've got toxins that they brought back from those Middle Eastern wars. And they lie to them. And they don't take care of them, just like they lied to the Vietnam veterans when they sprayed Agent Orange and got it all over them. And how many of our men of that era have died of horrible cancers? And they were told also that it was just, stress. How many of them come back from seeing all the horrors and the tortures and the horrendous treatment over there with post-traumatic stress disorder from horrible battle conditions? Go back to Korea, where our men were frozen to death on the ground in a UN action, a police action, Go back to World War II, where they had white men killing white men, and the war against Germany, and the enemy, the Jews, financed both sides of that. I mean, this has been going on. They were involved even in our Civil War, the War of 1812, all the wars, all of them. They had the financiers supplying both sides. And then they would gut the loser. Absolutely. War for profit. And this is done by the international Jews to our people. And we haven't thrown them off yet. Now, we've had a change now that Trump's been elected, but we have yet to see any actions by this man. We've heard a lot of promises, as we have heard from many, many politicians. They say one thing before the election and they do another thing after the election. Let's see. Let's see whether he's going to build that wall and stop the immigration and get these Muslims out of our country. What's he actually going to do? What's he going to do? He says he's going to do this and this and this. But we've yet to see anything because it's brand new. He hasn't even been inaugurated yet. So we'll see in January. He says he's going to get rid of Obamacare and he's going to do this and he's going to do that and doo-dah, doo-dah. Okay, that's great. But the only one in history that has actually done what he said he was going to do was Yeshua Messiah. He laid down his life in redemption for Israel. And as usual, we've got nominal Christianity, but it's churchianity, and it's been polluted and perverted. As we've seen in the book of Gideon, another book, where he made a religious object and Israel won after it. Well, we've got churchianity teaching apostianity. A Jewish Jesus, which he was not. King of the Jews, he was not. King of Judea, King of Israel. Nothing to do with Jews. The very word Jew is a false word. So we will see. What we will see. Meanwhile, here we are as Israelites. We know full well through past experiences we cannot trust the government to do anything. We must put our full trust and all our hope in Yeshua Messiah. He is the only one that is going to get us, as Israel, out of this mess that we are in. Anything else is smoke and mirrors and false hope. You cannot trust mankind. Mankind is not going to solve these problems. It's going to take divine intervention. I cannot stress enough that Israel, as a nation, and as individual Israelites, needs to be spiritually correct and obedient to our Father. Spiritual preparation should be the most important thing on your personal agenda, Israelite, man or woman, whoever. You need to get right with Yahweh. Second of all, if you have children, you need to teach your children about Yahweh, about His rules, about His law. You need to run your household in a scriptural manner. If your children are being indoctrinated in the public fool system, you need to get them out of that. You need to teach them the truth at home. That's where Bible teaching is most effective, is in the home. You need to set a personal example for your children by you living as an adult in a scriptural manner. If you don't live right, they're going to copy you because you're their role model. You are the parents. You need to set the standard by personal behavior in your home. I can't stress that enough. I cannot make you do that. All I can do as a voice here on the radio is to exhort you to righteousness. If you're going to be righteous, you're going to have to do it on your own. I cannot make you. I have my own problems to deal with in my own personal life where I have to battle my own urges as a flesh man. And I have to do battle with myself daily. This is not new. This is something that has gone on throughout history. We have our own individual one-on-one battle to fight with our flesh. Carnal desires, lust of the eyes, pride, all these things. I'm not exempt from that. I'm not Yeshua. I'm a man. The only reason I'm not dead right now is Yahweh's grace was extended to me. The only reason I'm not going to wind up in the lake of fire with the goats is because I believe and act on Yeshua's teachings as best I can. I fail. I'm not saying you're going to be perfect, because I sure am not perfect. That would be massive ego. That I think I'm better than you. I don't think I'm better than you. I know I'm not, for a fact. A lot of you out there are a lot better than I am. But I've been called to teach these words. I mean, I can't not do it. I can't refuse it. I can't stop. I fear Yahweh. I know He loves me, but I fear His wrath. I don't want to be disobedient. And when He called me and tells me that I need to do what I'm doing here right now, I'm going to do it. Otherwise, I'd be shaking in my boots. He's Yahweh, I'm not. I'm just a little spark in the universe. And I consider myself blessed. All the stupid stuff I've done in my life, and He has blessed me so much. Got me in with the EFR crew and Eli James and David James and Pastor Mullet and Pastor Visser. I mean, wow. It just gets on, all goes on and on. Andy Hitchcock. I mean, the whole lineup here. This is a hardcore CI station. That's just how it is. And it's what it needs to be. It's what it was designed to be. That's why Yahweh has prospered it. The EFR group is in obedience to our Father. What can I say? Nobody here should be on a pedestal. But the opportunity presented to me as an individual Israelite to do service for Yahweh gladdens my heart to an extreme degree. I love Yahweh. I love Yahshua. I love His law, as David did. I love all His laws, and I try to keep them as best I can. My greatest enemy is not even the Jews. It's me. The guy in the mirror. I have to fight me every day to be obedient. And you're in the same situation. I know you are. I know you are. And I just want to cheer you on and wish you the best and pray that Yahweh blesses you as He's blessed me. And those that are of faithful, that are ready, constant listeners to EFR, that know the Word, and love the Word, and they listen because they love hearing the Word. I'm not preaching to the choir. They already know what I'm talking about. They just like the readings, okay? That's it. All my little explanations for all the notes I've done over all the years gives extra insight. And I'm privileged to be able to do that. This country has a chance to make a new beginning. I don't know whether America is going to take advantage of that. I don't know whether the people in power will give us a short period of respite. I know that the puppet masters would have had Hillary do some horrendous things. She is an evil, evil person, and those with her do evil. I don't know if Trump is better. He may be more subtle and maybe not quite so aggressive, but he's still going to dance to the tune of the people that put him in office. No one can run for presidency without being approved by the unseen, unelected puppet masters. We already know this. but we know that Yeshua is going to return soon. I cannot stress that enough. Prepare yourselves for that. Get your family ready spiritually, get them ready physically. Get supplies, food, water, equipment, whatever you can afford, whatever you can. Gird your loins for battle, because it's coming. I believe in our lifetime. I may be wrong. If you have the stuff and don't need it, it's not going to hurt a thing. Not going to hurt a thing. If you do need it and don't have it, well, then that's a flip side to that coin, isn't it? Better to be prepared than to be caught short, because it's your family's survival that's at stake. It's going to get worse before it gets better. We are in the time of Jacob's trouble. The time of tribulation will come. I think we've been given a little bit of grace period here with Trump getting elected. Yahweh's mercy is extended again. So, pray to Yahweh for guidance in your life, and praise Him in all things, because our time is short. Matter of fact, I am running out of time here for this hour. I will be back on Monday, November the 14th, reading from Judges 9 and 10. And I will wish you Yahweh's blessings. And Shalom Aleichem, which means peace be unto you. And I will catch you on Monday. Praise Yahweh in all things.